Hey, everybody, this is Robert Evans, and welcome once again to It Could Happen Here, a podcast where we talk about the fact that, you know, things are kind of falling apart, and we try to arm you with information to help deal with that. As I'm sure most of you are aware, one of the big news pieces that happened just about 2 days ago, when as I'm recording this, is that the state of Texas finally rammed through a massive abortion restriction that essentially kind of their goal, and they've so far been successful in this, was kind of looping around Roe v. Wade by essentially deputizing regular Texans to get $10,000 bounties on their fellow citizens by reporting people who get abortions after 6 weeks, in addition to kind of shutting down any legal avenue to do that. So the Supreme Court has so far punted on taking any action on that, and it's a pretty desperate situation. There's now rumblings that Florida is going to try to do the same thing. And as a result, there's never been a more important time to talk about the subject of today's episode, which is self-managed abortion. And in order to talk about that, because I'm certainly no expert, we've got Susan Yano, who was a co-founder of Women Help Women and Self-Managed Abortion Safe and Supported. Susan, thank you very much for coming on the show and talking with me today.
Sure. It's nice to be here. And maybe a place to start is to talk about what self-managed abortion is.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that is shocking, even though abortion pills have been allowed by the FDA in this country since 2000, lots of people don't know that there are pills that essentially cause a miscarriage. They have been available in clinics since the year 2000, but even more importantly, they've been available outside the clinic since the 1980s. And people in other countries have been using them on their own safely and effectively. And increasingly over the last decade, people in this country have been using these exact same pills safely and effectively on their own. So I just want to be clear, because people, when they hear the word self-managed abortion, might flash on unsafe methods like sharp objects or herbs, which can be safe but can be unsafe, but haven't really been scientifically documented. These pills have been studied more than almost any other medicine on the planet. And so we know from science that misoprostol with or without mifepristone, that's the names of the pills, cause a safe abortion.
And, you know, I was listening to an interview with you earlier today, and you brought up something that I was unaware of, which is that these medicines kind of got their start being used for self-managed abortion in Latin America, where abortion is, legal abortion at least, is in many places just not available. And women, it was initially an ulcer drug? Am I remembering that correctly?
Misoprostol was originally registered for ulcers. And yeah, it was women in Brazil who noticed that right on the pill container, it said, do not use if you're pregnant, could cause uterine contractions. And as in every country in the world for generations, if people don't want to be pregnant, they try to figure out a way to end that pregnancy, regardless of the law. So women started experimenting with taking misoprostol. Ultimately, the World Health Organization has studied these pills and come up with the most recommended protocols, which people can find on our website, abortionpillinfo.org, or in many, many places in the internet if they Google the words misoprostol and abortion.
And your organization doesn't provide the pills, but you do provide people information on how.
Right.
Yeah.
The idea of SAS, yeah, because there are restrictions. There are some legal risks in people,
sure,
using these pills on their own, even before this draconian law in Texas, which tries to criminalize everybody. But it is legal to share information that's published in scientific journals and by the World Health Organization. So on the website, abortionpillinfo.org, are the protocols for how to use misoprostol alone or in combination with mifepristone, because it is a little more effective when combined with mifepristone, but the mifepristone is harder to get.
And people, I think, are often frightened about just the idea of self-managed abortion, in part because when people talk about the bad old days before Roe v. Wade, they're talking about something that I think people would think about when they hear self-managed abortion, if they're not aware of kind of what it actually is. But one of the points you make that I think is so valid is that just on its own, like if you do nothing, about 15 to 20% of pregnancies self-terminate on their own. And this is what the pills are doing. It's nothing different than what happens if you just kind of have an embryo stop.
Exactly. The pills cause the uterus to contract and push out whatever's in there. I think you raise a really important issue, because there's two things. One is these abortion pills have been so tightly regulated and controlled by our medical institutions that people aren't as familiar with them as they could and should be. I mean, these pills are so safe that they could be in people's medicine cabinets. But in this country, sexuality is really restricted. We should have over-the-counter birth control pills.
Absolutely.
And we don't. So the first thing is, I think, is just to demystify these pills and to say that they're safe and effective. But the other is the stigma around abortion.
Yeah.
The anti-abortion people have worked really hard to make people ashamed about their sexuality and ashamed about a pregnancy that they didn't want, as if people can do it all by themselves without somebody else being involved. And so this burden on women is they're so shamed that they have a lot of fear and stigma around trying to get an abortion, even outside of Texas.
Yeah,
but then you compound it with this fear that has been raised by the anti-abortion people, all this misinformation. Oh, these pills aren't safe. Oh, they could cause breast cancer. Oh, they can impair future fertility, all of which has been debunked and is not true. But as we all know, misinformation has a long shelf life.
Yeah, a longer shelf life than the truth in a lot of cases.
Fortunately, exactly.
I want to talk a little bit about just kind of the facts about how this stuff functions. So particularly we have a lot of listeners in Texas. I'm sure a decent number of the people listening right now are very rightfully concerned. The present law essentially criminalizes medical abortion after 6 weeks. How late through do these pills work? And then the second question I have is, obviously, a lot of women who get pregnant don't realize they're pregnant until after 6 weeks. It can take a while. So what options? I know you have some options to recommend for tracking that are helpful as well, an app.
Right. Yeah. So the first thing I just want to say is a lot of people don't know how to calculate the number of days of pregnancy. And they hear this term LMP, last menstrual period. Basically, people can count from the first day of their last menstruation to figure out how pregnant they are. We do have an app that I want to recommend called Yuki, E-U-K-I, comes from the word eucalyptus, which is a menstrual tracker, but also has information about how to use contraception, how to use abortion pills. It is private and secure. The information is not available to anybody. It was not commercially developed. It was developed by grants. So even we don't know, other than how many people download it, we don't know how people are using it. So I think it's really important that people understand how their bodies work, understand how to figure out how pregnant they are, and then understand how to use these pills. You asked a really important question, which is how late can these pills be used? The WHO has studied the use of these pills through 12 weeks, and there is a set of protocols for how to use them for 12 weeks. And basically, with misoprostol alone, a person would need 12 tablets, 200 micrograms each. They would put 4 pills under their tongue, let them dissolve 30 minutes, and then swallow. Wait 3 hours, do it again, 4 pills under the tongue, 30 minutes, and then wait 3 hours, and then use the last 4 pills. However, after 12 weeks, the pills can also be used to end a pregnancy. Misoprostol can be used for labor induction. Counterintuitively, however, the longer the pregnancy, the less misoprostol is needed.
Oh,
and
interesting.
A person doesn't want to take too much. Exactly. You and I probably think, oh, I have a headache, I'll take 2 aspirin. Oh, it didn't go away, I'll take 2 more.
Yeah.
Counterintuitively, as the uterus stretches with pregnancy, it's more sensitive to misoprostol and actually can be dangerous to use as much as one would use in the first 12 weeks.
Interesting.
Anybody who wants to learn more can either go on the website, abortionpillinfo.org, or use that website and contact skilled counselors from Women Help Women who are based overseas, who answer over 12,000 emails a month about how to use these pills. And they will counsel people regardless of the number. They need to know how many weeks pregnant
sure.
person is. They will adapt the information to that situation. But most people in this country who've gone to clinics for abortion do it in the first 9 or 10 weeks. And these pills are extremely safe and effective to use with these WHO protocols up to 12 weeks. So while you're correct that most people don't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks, by the time they're 8, 9, 10 weeks,
sure,
they've missed a period usually, and they've taken a pregnancy test, and the urine pregnancy tests that people buy in the dollar store or in the pharmacy are pretty accurate.
Yeah. You brought up something, which is that you have these people who can help, like, provide advice, and they're overseas. And you kind of specify that every time I hear you talk about it. And you also specify the degree of security which you put on these conversations. And it's a degree that I think is uncommon for what should be a pretty basic medical procedure. And it's obviously because of there's potential consequences here. I'm interested in kind of, what are some of the present legal consequences, and what are some of your worries when you adopt these very stringent security measures for people who come to you?
So let's leave Texas aside. Prior to the Texas law, approximately 24 people in the United States had been prosecuted for using abortion pills without a clinician involved. In other words, for self-managing their abortion. It's important to say most of the people who were prosecuted were not ultimately convicted, but some were, because many states criminalize the use of these pills without a clinician involved. That being said, thousands and thousands and thousands of people are obtaining misoprostol or mifepristone plus misoprostol in the United States. We have some websites that actually share the number of pills that they're sending into the U.S., and we also know about misoprostol sales going way up in countries where it is available over the counter. So there's no doubt, and also people have shared their stories. So that 24 is a tiny percentage of all the people who have used these pills. However, these pills are safe and effective, and nobody should have legal risk in using them. Therefore, when we set up SAS, which is Self-Managed Abortion, Safe and Supported, and it's a project of this international organization, Women Help Women, we were very aware that in the U.S. there's a lot of surveillance of people's bodies. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of potential to hack into people's emails. So we set up a very secure system where people can email our overseas counselors on a very secure server and get back an answer that will disappear within 7 days. So there's no evidence in their phone or electronic device that they ever sent this email. We just thought, you know, it's an extra step. Most people probably aren't even aware they're going through a secure site, but we want to make sure that nobody who contacts us can ever be prosecuted.
Yeah. And it seems like you're worried, especially given the nature of the Texas law, you're worried about vigilantes as much as anything, not necessarily even the state, but you know, the kind of people who show up outside of Planned Parenthoods with guns.
The good thing about an international organization running this is none of the people answering the email are in the U.S.
Yeah.
Pretty difficult for these Texas vigilantes, or frankly, anybody else, to file a lawsuit. First of all, it's all anonymized. Women Help Women doesn't advertise who our staff are.
Of course.
And none of them are in this country.
I mean, that's very smart. When was it set up this way? Like, how long ago were you kind of thinking about the direction? Because it seems like you had a pretty blunt understanding of where things were headed.
So Women Help Women was founded in 2014, and we work in 82 countries.
Yeah.
We work in countries like the Philippines, where any kind of drug dealer has been called a murderer.
Jesus, yeah.
We work in Poland, where abortion is not legal in anywhere in the country. We work in many places in Latin America where abortion is highly criminalized. So we had security set up from the beginning. It was actually shortly after the election of, I'll call him Orange 45, because sworn that our ex-president's name will never cross my lips.
Fair enough.
My colleagues from Poland said, you know, we used to have legal abortion and we lost it, and you're going to lose it too. People in the U.S. better, you know, we should do something for people in the United States. And that's why. So SAS was founded shortly after the inauguration of the last president and has been in place ever since. A lot of our work is not just the website and answering, it's really raising the awareness of our colleagues. We also before COVID went into communities, now we do it via Zoom, we actually do 3-hour trainings to teach people how to use these medicines and how to teach others.
That's awesome.
We, we have a manual in English and Spanish. We have people doing these trainings all over the U.S. And have reached thousands of people directly with this information, sort of prophylactically, with the belief that it shouldn't be when a person's pregnant that they understand how these pills work. This is basic information that people should have gotten in high school.
It's like knowing how to put on a tourniquet or something. It should be part of your first aid.
Or how to put, when to put on a Band-Aid and when to take an aspirin.
Yeah.
You know, how do you treat a cold? So the knowledge about these pills, we've worked very hard to make it very accessible. We actually have we've done these trainings in countries where there's not a lot of literacy.
Yeah.
So we have graphics, we have videos, we have lots of ways to teach. Many aren't appropriate for the US where there's more literacy, but sometimes less understanding about how bodies work. So, so our goal has been to, we also go to professional conferences and sit on panels and try to raise awareness within the reproductive rights and reproductive justice movement about the importance of self-managed abortion as a tool of empowerment and breaking stigma. Not as, hey, if you can't get to a clinic, try these, but why is this option not available to me in a state like Massachusetts where I live, where there's plenty of clinics, but why can't I just walk down to the Walgreens and get these pills if a doctor tells me it's okay or without a doctor?
Yeah.
They're so safe. So we really advocate for self-managed abortion as a viable option. It should be viable regardless of the law. Obviously, for many people, it's the only option in places like Texas.
Yeah.
But it's as good. It's a better. Some people don't want to go see a clinician.
Yeah.
They don't want to go through a bunch of protesters. They would just like to get a package in the mail with their medicines.
Yeah. I mean, there's both the tool of an immediate need in that there's desperate people who need access to this, but it's also in a broader sense, like building power within individuals and within communities to manage their own reproductive health care, which I think is really important.
Exactly. And there are people who could get to a clinic and have the means to go to a clinic who are opting not to go to a clinic. And because they feel confident in their ability to take these pills as directed.
Yeah.
To manage it. And I just want to say, we started this conversation with talking about 15 to 20% of all pregnancies end in a miscarriage. Most people who have a miscarriage don't get medical care.
Yeah.
They can manage the bleeding and they know when it's over and they know that they're fine.
Which I think is an important point, because I know people who have had very difficult miscarriages, but that's not most of them. Most of them are mild enough that, like you said, you don't need medical care.
Well, I just want to be clear, using the abortion pills does cause cramping and bleeding.
Yeah.
But it is not so far out of most people with a uterus's experience to have cramping and bleeding every month.
Yeah.
So this is heavier cramping, heavier bleeding, but we know how to deal with this.
Another point you make that I think is really important is that, with any medication, there's a chance it'll be used wrong or it'll have an unexpected effect. If you take this stuff and you have to go to the doctor, you don't need to tell the doctor, this is what I've taken. Could you talk to that about a little bit, how someone would, if they needed to go to the doctor as a result of an interaction or something, what they would be best to say?
Well, there are two kinds of complications that can happen. In very, very rare cases, a person can bleed too much, have a hemorrhage.
Yeah.
And they do absolutely need medical care. The chance of a hemorrhage with these pills is exactly the same as the chance of a hemorrhage with a natural miscarriage. So it happens. Doctors in every ER know how to treat it. The other complication that can happen is an infection. There's some retained tissue and the bleeding continues and they need to get antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really interesting about these pills is they move through the body relatively quickly. And there is no test of blood or urine for them. As long as the person, especially if the person followed the directions and used them under the tongue or in the cheeks, they've gone through the stomach, they're gone.
Yeah.
In some directions say to use the misoprostol vaginally. The problem with that is the inert substances in the pills could stay in the vagina for up to 3 days, and then there's evidence. right? Yeah. Because the doctor could see the crumbs if they do a pelvic exam. But as long as the person used the pills, either used the misoprostol, one swallows the mifepristone, as long as they use it and it's absorbed through the mouth, there are no tests. So the person can say, I'm bleeding and I don't know why. Which, by the way, many people with a miscarriage don't know they were pregnant.
It happens all the time.
Yeah. Or they could say, I was pregnant and I think I'm having a miscarriage.
Yeah.
We are really trying to work with some professional groups to increase awareness that people shouldn't be vigilantes. Healthcare providers should not be vigilantes.
Sure.
But the only way a person's going to get in trouble is if they say they use the medicines.
Yeah.
Because even if the doctor says, did you use the medicines? There is no reason to say it. The treatment is exactly the same as for a natural miscarriage.
I wanted to ask kind of how listeners, particularly listeners who, you know, may not personally need this medicine, but may want to support what you're doing, or may need the medicine and still want to support what you're doing. Are there ways in which people can either financially or otherwise help support y'all?
Absolutely. Again, abortionpillinfo.org is our website. There's a whole section of what people can do. They can learn about these pills and tell other people. Mm-hmm. They can get stickers to let people know they exist. Because remember, most people don't know there are abortion pills. So they don't even know how to look on the internet for this thing. You know, so sharing information is really important. There's also a donation button there. But the biggest thing that people can do in this moment, apart from donating, is to educate themselves. They can either sign up to take one of our trainings and become we call them trainers, but it's really information sharing.
Yeah.
You know, you and I have just talked about these pills. You understand them more than you did half an hour ago.
Absolutely.
Training is a little too formal of a term for what we do, but afterwards people will understand these pills very well and be able to support others who either want to know about them or are using them.
And the last thing I'd kind of like to ask you, if you don't mind sharing, is how did you get into this personally? Like what brought you into this line of?
Great question. Yeah. So I've been doing abortion access work since the 80s. I was involved in the big demonstrations in front of the clinics, et cetera. But I've also spent a lot of time in Mexico where these pills are over the counter and known. And it wasn't until, and I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but it wasn't until about 15 years ago that it suddenly occurred to me, wait a second, I wonder why people in the US aren't doing what people in Mexico are doing. I'm just, you know, it's like I was crossing the border, but the idea hadn't crossed.
Yeah.
And I started working with another international organization, Women on Waves, that was supplying these pills all over the world. And I learned more about them. And I eventually gave up my other day job. And started doing this work more directly over the last 10 years.
Awesome. Well, Susan, I think that's everything I had to ask. Was there anything else you wanted to make sure to get out today?
No, I just want to be really clear that while this is a human right and that there people should have the option of going to a clinic and the closing of the, this is going to result in clinics in Texas being shut down, essentially.
It's horrible.
Anybody who's, you know, and they can't keep their doors open with the few people who happen to get in before 6 weeks. And I think we have to do everything possible to support there being access to clinicians, that this is an option that we all need to learn more about.
Yeah.
And to think about why is this so controlled? If this was a medicine, like it's more controlled than opiates.
Yeah.
It's certainly more controlled than Viagra. And it's crazy. And it's misogynistic that these pills are not in our hands.
Yeah.
So, I would encourage your listeners to get on the website. If they want more information, there is, you know, they can easily email through the website and learn whatever they want. But it's all of our responsibility to learn this and to help get this information out.
Absolutely. Susan Yeno, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening. This has been It Could Happen Here, and we'll be back tomorrow with another episode. Thank you so much, Susan.
You're very welcome.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.